Okay, Education and Finance will come to order. We do have a quorum, so would someone like to move the minutes? Representative Newton, you're pretty proficient.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes.
Okay, so the minutes are moved. And we'll vote on the minutes. So all those in favor of Representative Newton's motion to approve the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes are carried. So we're going to start with a state assessments overview, and this is in your packet, and this information is on the PSEO.
No.
Oh, got it. I apologize. So we're going to start with the state assessments overview, and we have two testifiers, starting with the just one. I apologize. I wasn't given a lot of information when I was put up here. If you'd like, we can start the meeting over. So, if Jennifer Dugan would like to come up. Okay, now I have my composure. Included in your packet today is information from the last meeting on the PSEO that was requested. So, if you'd like that, you'll find that in your packet. And Ms. Dugan, if you'd like to state your name for the record, and you can begin your presentation. Welcome.
Thank you.
As you can tell, it's a highly run and very organized committee.
Thank you very much for having me. My name is Jennifer Dugan, and I'm the Director for Statewide Testing at the Minnesota Department of Education. And I appreciate those of you that were in attendance at last Thursday's meeting. You will recognize the slides. The content will not be drastically different, but if you have follow-up questions, I do have some follow-up to the questions that were asked, and so we'll cover those at the end. And so hopefully it meets the entire committee's needs, and I appreciate sitting through the duplication. So this first slide really, in words, articulates the federal and also state requirements of the Minnesota assessment system. And so at a federal level, we are required to assess all students each year in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school in math and reading. And then in science, we're also required to assess students once in the elementary grades, once in the middle grades, and once in high school. Specifically in Minnesota, we assess in grades 5 for the elementary, grade 8 for the middle grades, and the high school science assessment is a life science assessment. So it's taken when students have completed instruction in the life science benchmarks and standards. And those math, reading, and science assessments are developed specifically for and exclusively for Minnesota. So all of those test questions are we start with the Minnesota academic standards, we develop test specifications for those, and then we take that as the essence in those marching orders, and we create individual items for specifically for Minnesota to be on those assessments. We also are required at a federal level to assess all English learners each year, and that's an assessment in grades kindergarten through 12th grade, and that assesses English acquisition through the subjects of math, reading, listening, and speaking, or writing, reading, listening, and speaking. Additionally, in Minnesota, we have some state statute requirements. And so we are also required to administer a grade 8 and a grade 10 assessment that is predictive of a college entrance exam and also allows students to explore career interests and to inform their career planning and their individual plans for high school. Based on a student's performance on those grade 8 and grade 10 assessments that was were just on grade or slide 3, a student that is identified as not prepared for post-secondary success is also under state statute required to be offered the college placement diagnostic test. And so they can take that at any point after they receive that grade 10 score and up until the time that they take the college entrance exam in the spring of their 11th grade year. So that's a larger than a year window so that that individual student can determine when is the best time for them to take that assessment. And then additionally, in Minnesota, we offer the grade 11 ACT to all students, and that's ACT plus writing. And so the math, reading, and writing this year, it's April 28th. And so for those of you that are more visual learners, such as myself, this is just a graphic representation of what I just said. So again, the red diamonds at the top represents the assessments that we're required to administer under federal and state accountability calculations. And so, again, those red diamonds are what contributes to a school's multiple measurements rating. And then the green squares are specific to English learners and students that are only identified as English learners. And again, that's grades K through 12. And then the blue circles are the assessments that are specific to Minnesota for college and career. And so this next slide really just gives the testing timelines. There's really no new information on this slide. It's just letting you know that access for ELL's test or the assessment specific for those English learners is given in late winter. And then in the spring is when the MCAs or MTAS are given. And MCA stands for Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment. And MTAS stands for Minnesota Test of Academic Skills. So a student would only take MCA or would take MTAS. They would not take both. And the MTAS is developed specifically for special education students and those special education students that are the most severely cognitively challenged. It's an individual administration and very specific to the student's needs. A very small percentage of Minnesota students take that assessment, so approximately 99% of the students take MCA in math, reading, and science. And then career and college ready assessments. This year in the fall, we administered Explore and Plan, and then Compass. That Compass window opened January 5th of this year. And again, that window is from January 5th of their 10th grade year until late April of their junior year. And then this spring is the grade 11 ACT, and so again, that'll be April 28th. So just a little bit about timelines. I know that this is probably the majority of what the questions that you receive from constituents are really about reporting and why can't a parent get the results back faster. And so the MCA testing window this year is March 9th to May 8th. For science, it does go until May 15th, but math and reading ends on May 8th. So this year, all of the MCAs are online. And once a student completes their assessment, within an hour of that student completing the assessment, the school has access to those results electronically. They can use that information. A lot of what we talked about on Thursday was different districts are approaching that in different ways. Some districts send that information home. Some districts are looking at that for instructional purposes only or for planning purposes for next year and are waiting for those final reports. So what goes into those final reports that the department creates? So from May 26th to June 12th, there is that window of time is available for districts to go in and ensure that their data elements are correct. This is not changing a score. This is not the opportunity to say that they're not changing a score. They are indicating that maybe new information came to light and previously they marked the student as absent, and what they really should have marked the student was medically excused. It's the data elements associated with those administrations. So it's not their score, it's the data elements. And so once they've cleaned that up, then they have official results on June 24th, and they have official results available to the districts electronically. And then August 3rd is when the paper reports arrive in districts. So we take that information once the window closes, and that information is available. Individual data is available to districts on June 24th. Then we take that data, we aggregate it, and the student reports are created, and then also mailed to the districts for them to distribute to parents. So accountability calculations, if you'll remember that chart, the red diamonds at the top, again, the accountability calculations utilize those MCA and MTAF scores. And again, that's each student grades 3 through 8 in math and reading, and once in high school for math and reading, and then for science in Minnesota is grade 5, 8, and once in high school. Our calculations are verified by a quality control vendor, so we're sure that those accountability calculations are correct. And then in early August, districts receive their preliminary AYP results, and then they have, according to state consistent with state statute, they have 30 days to review those AYP calculations, and then September 1st is the public release. And then those, just as a reminder, those accountability calculations are in Minnesota are used to identify schools as reward, focus, and priority, and then support schools as identified there, and additional supports. A little bit of additional context, because everything I've talked about so far is really focusing on, especially the dates, really focusing on the 14-15 school year. But wanted to be sure that you were aware of where we were headed, and just to give a brief update on MDE's efforts to implement legislation. So beginning in 2016, we're required to include off-grade items in grades 3 through 7, and so we're working towards that. That will require that the test is longer, because the first portion of the test will be aligned to the grade level content, and then based on how they performed on that grade level content, then there will be the additional off-grade items. So just wanted to let you know that we are well on our way to developing those models and implementing that. Additionally, in 2016, state statute requires that for grades 3 through 7, we indicate an on-track indication for students whether or not they're on track for career in college. It has been requested that, though it's not required in statute, that we also include that indication for grades 8 and 10 on the MCA. And so we have begun that work and developing the statistical models to give information for an individual student beginning in grade 3 about their preparation for career in college. Just so that everyone's aware that we're not doing this in independence, we really are looking for district feedback and district input and hearing from the experts. So this is just the list of advisory committees that we meet with on a regular basis, and they are recurring meetings. So, for example, the Accommodations Committee, the Accommodations Advisory Review Panel, or ARP, as we affectionately refer to them. That group is made up of special education advocates, special education teachers, national experts in special education. They're really advising us on our accommodations procedures and which accommodations we provide annually on our assessments for MCAs. We've got the Assessment Advisory Committee that is required in statute, and they typically meet in conjunction with the Local Assessment and Accountability Advisory Committee. And those two groups are really helping us more on the day-to-day aspects. So, for example, the testing calendar. We don't finalize or draft a testing calendar without that group's input, and really thinking about what are the implications and what are specific windows. The Technical Advisory Committee is a group of national testing experts that come in and give us advice. For example, they're working with us developing those statistical models on the off-grade level piece, as well as the on-track for indicating career and college preparation. The State Assessment Technology Work Group, as you might expect, really focuses on technology and giving feedback on the implementation of the assessments, really from the technology director's perspective. So this is just, these are some groups that are specific and have a very limited focus and a limited time. So I believe the Testing Reduction Advisory Group made some recommendations, and I think we're scheduled to give, or the department is scheduled to give a presentation on those recommendations next week. So we'll talk further about those. The Test Policies and Procedures Committee is really advising us, again, on those testing policies, and really focused on more of the test security and data integrity, and making sure that we're taking all of those aspects into account. So there's district staff, there's Education Minnesota representatives, et cetera. There's a broad range of folks on that committee. And just in case you were curious, part of the work that went into that test reduction work group was we drafted a survey for the districts to tell us what assessments they're providing, because what I can really speak to is the assessments that that the state requires, and that's all that I can talk about is which assessments are required and that the state administers. So we needed to get some information from the districts about what are the assessments that districts are deciding to offer, and what does that look like. And so we got that information before that test reduction work group started their work. Roughly 50% of the districts did respond to the survey, which was really good. I think participation, given that there was no incentive for participating. And then so those are some of the assessments that were listed, and just one quick statistic was that roughly 98% of those districts that were surveyed choose to offer additional assessments for a variety of reasons, and that was talked about during that work group. So I'm sure that will come up next week. So again, we're a little bit back on the reporting piece, and talking about what are the reporting options that are available to districts. So MDE provides a portal to districts that is secure access, and the reason that is secure access is because it is providing information at the level of detail of an individual student. So it's a password-protected system. They can look at their specific district data or get to the level of an individual student. They can analyze the data or, just get out an individual student's report. We also provide the data center, which is a public site. So it has much of the same interface that is that the secure reports has, but it is protecting the personally identifiable information. And so we have a minimum cell size of 10 that we don't report information any smaller than that in order to protect the student's privacy. We do have reporting available through the vendor. And again, I touched on that briefly when I was talking about the scores that are available within an hour of the student completing their test. That's through our vendor system, through Pearson's on-demand system. And so they can roster that. So an individual teacher, if all of their fifth graders, for example, are done testing, then that fifth grade teacher can go in and look at how her students did overall or individually. Then also there's a longitudinal reporting system, and that again is provided through Pearson's online interface and provides historical information with tools for them to analyze. So again, the on-demand is really there to provide that more immediate snapshot of the reports. The longitudinal reporting system is really looking at trends over time and giving information about a larger group of students. That said, they can get down to an individual student's level if they want to look at an individual student's, for example, reports from 2011, 12, 13, 14, and shortly this spring. So where are we headed? There was a considerable amount of conversation on Thursday about this. So we've talked about the trajectory for career and college readiness required to provide starting in spring of 16, as well as that off-grade level information. And so I don't know how familiar you are with our reports that go home to parents, that those individual student reports. There's a lot of information there, and so we're running into a real estate problem. And so we have to redesign them, because as new information has to come onto those reports, something has to come off. And so so we're bringing in focus groups to inform that redesign. Those focus groups, we would like for parents and teachers and students to be involved in that. We want to be sure that those reports, when we redesign them, are meaningful for all of the stakeholders and are interpretable as well. Keeping with that interpretive theme, we really would like to work to develop and improve some additional interpretive materials. We've got the benchmark reports currently for science, and we're working to provide those for math and reading. And then we're also looking for ways that we can provide more detailed information based off of a student's performance or a teacher's roster. What additional information can we give? One piece that we think would be really great, assuming that the item pool will support it, is to provide sample items or sample questions at each of the score points. So really helping parents and teachers and students understand that what a meets item looks like. How does this same skill vary across the achievement levels? So that's really something that we've talked about. We really want to get to. And the parent portal was something that we talked a lot about as well on Thursday. Again, when we were talking about the parent portal, a lot of internal to MDE, it went hand in hand with the report redesign, thinking about what's the snapshot, or what's the minimum amount of information without overwhelming that we can provide on that individual student report, while also maybe providing additional interpretive materials or additional supports in that parent portal as well. We're very excited to, again, bring those pieces to focus groups and to get feedback from, again, all stakeholders, especially the parents and students, to improve our reporting features. I think some of you have gotten some questions about our administration mode. So the MCAs in math and reading were originally administered on paper. All were on paper. We conducted comparability studies as we transitioned to online. And so in math, for 3 through 8, we transitioned to online in 2011. In reading, we transitioned to online in 2013. Science has always been online since it was just conceptualized. So that was since 2007, science has been online. And the advantage of that really is that now we have new item types. Our assessments are not just multiple choice questions. They really are getting at those higher order thinking skills and asking students to show their work in a very technological way. But again, we think that online affords us many opportunities, not the least of which is, again, for that immediate reporting piece. So we had to reformat the multiple choice items that transferred from the paper bank to the online bank. And then the transition from online to adaptive is not an insignificant shift. Though the assessment is available online, we've got to be sure that we have a vast item pool there to administer an adaptive test, and we are progressing towards that. State statute requires that the administration for math and reading grades 3 through 7 be adaptive in spring of 16. We are well on our way to that, and field testing many items this spring to make that possible. We are working towards the transition from online from a laptop or from a desktop to also supporting mobile devices. And so while that is exciting and it's definitely where instructional practices are going, we've got to be sure that not only do we reformat all of our items that are formatted currently for the sensitivity of a mouse, we've got to reformat them for the sensitivity of a finger, so all of the drop-down boxes have to be reformatted and think about that. But we also have to think about, are we going to lose test questions? Are we going to lose passages as we transition? And I'm exceptionally nervous about this as we transition to online at the same time. We have made a commitment to supporting mobile devices with a particular screen size, but supporting mobile devices in the 15-16 school year, we announced that back in August, so we are moving that direction. But I'm very nervous about what the pilot study is going to show. So in April, we're going to be out with Minnesota test questions, with Minnesota students, interacting with them on tablets, and asking for their feedback. An example of why we would lose something might be, for example, a poem that when it's in print format, we can preserve verse and line of a poem. When you move to a mobile device, everything is programmed in HTML, so it automatically wraps to fit the device that you're on. And so that line and verse might be now scrolling rather than the way the author intended. And so we have to think about that as we transition. And what is that interaction between the scrolling with the automatic wrapping and the student answering specific questions? So just one of the things that provides more gray hair for me. So this is the Finance Committee, so this is a new slide for those of you keeping score. So I just included the costs for the different contracts that we have with different vendors. I separated out the Pearson contract for Explore and Plan versus the other assessments. So included in the roughly 19.5 is the all of the MCAs, all of the MTAS, and everything else. So all of the online reporting systems, the administrative systems, all of those pieces are under that piece and separate from the Explore and Plan portion of our cost, but it's all under one contract. And then the others are listed as well. The bottom one, HumRO, is probably the one that we've talked the least about. That's our quality control vendor, and that vendor replicates our scoring. So the scoring is done at the vendor. MDE replicates the scoring. HumRO replicates the scoring. And then also, as we've talked about, Humrol also replicates our accountability calculations. So before we release the MMR results, Humrol validates that and makes sure that we did everything correctly. And any adjustments are made if an error is found. Just a few quick updates for information from Thursday's meeting. So there were a few questions about OLPA administration, and OLPA stands for Optional Local Purpose Assessment. And that is an assessment that is provided by the department. It is free of charge to the districts, but the O is very much italicized, bolded, and very large font. It is optional, and so some questions were asked about administration counts. I don't have necessarily by district, but they were able to pull a report that 380 districts. So if you recall, there's approximately 500 districts in the state. So 380 districts have administered some OLPA test, be that math and or reading. And right now, interestingly enough, the count is about 50-50, where between math and reading, it's they've administered over probably, because I got this report on Monday, so I'm going to round up, because I'm guessing that there have been some tests since. Approximately 305,000 assessments for math and reading have been administered since the window opened, and that was in late September. I think it was September 28th or 29th. And again, that OLPA assessment is available in grades 3 through 8, and there's two administrations per student for grades 3 through 8. And that is an adaptive assessment. It does use Minnesota items. It does use the same algorithm as what we use in the spring, and it does use the same reporting metric as the spring MCA. And then there's one opportunity per student available for reading OLPA, and that's available in all grades 3 through 8 and 10. So if I were to hazard a guess, I would say that the math numbers are going to go up quite a bit, because I would guess that most of them, the window closes February 20th, and from what I've heard, many of the districts wait for that second opportunity much closer to the spring MCA window opening to get that updated projected score. Perspective usage. Where's my numbers? I don't have the numbers on perspective, but we will get those for you. There were a few questions about adding additional student groups for analysis on MDE's report card, specifically looking at homeless and highly mobile students. We looked at it, and there's approximately 30 districts that have more than 50 homeless students, but that's across all of the grades. So if we were, we believe that if we were to develop a report, it would not be a publicly available report because we would be identifying an individual student in an individual grade with individual demographics. And so I was able to get a little bit more information on that. I also have costs for that if you would like to talk about that. I think we talked, I don't think I got into the level of detail with the reporting timelines and those focus groups. Pearson and MDE have had many more discussions since our Thursday meeting, and so just to give you a little bit of an update on our timelines, MDE should receive our first draft of new mock-ups of what those new student reports would look like, and some options from Pearson in late February, and then we'll bring together a focus group to talk about the preliminary vision of what a parent portal looks like. What do those student redesigned reports look like? And so that would be in mid-March, And then in April, we would bring that group back to review prototypes. So based on the feedback that they would give us in March, they would be able to look at some specific prototypes in April. And I think... And that's all the updates that I have. So I think, I hope I covered all of the questions that you had from Thursday.
Thank you, Ms. Dugan. Appreciate your testimony. I've got a number of members on the list. I'm just going to list you off, so in case I missed anybody. I have Representatives Christensen, Erickson, Quam, Dabney, Mullery. Did you have your hand up, Mullery? Anybody else want to be added to the list right now? Mariani? All right, you can still, and Seltzer, you can still add yourselves. I just want to make sure I had all the people who had already raised their hand. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, is the cost of the RFP for the Compass included in your other, on that page where you delineated the breakdown of costs for testing? What was the Compass included in that?
Ms. Dugan.
In the everything else?
Thank you. I'm sorry. Compass would actually be included in ACT.
Oh, ACT. Okay.
So that ACT contract is for the ACT plus writing, and then also included in that would be the Compass administration, and Compass, again, is the college placement diagnostic assessment that not all students would take. The students that, based on the performance on that grade 8 and 10 assessment, are not ready for career or college, then that's who's eligible to take that Compass assessment.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Dugan, is that a yearly cost, or is this for the duration of the contract for an endless number of years?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Representative, that these are costs for this school year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Loon. Under the previous RFP for the MCAs, et cetera, what happened to the data? Because I've heard that the data from AIR may, especially for Plan and Explore, might be in the clouds. Could you comment on what has happened to that data and whether or not it's been protected, or whether it's just still roaming around out there and could be accessible?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. I'll do my best to understand what the question was, and then you can ask for clarification if I don't hit it right on out of the park. Before the end of the contract, the previous vendor, AIR, did provide the historical data to Pearson. So districts in that longitudinal reporting system, districts have access to all of the MCA 3 assessments for an individual student. So for grades 3 through 8 math, they have access to 2011. Currently, they have access from 2011 to 2014. For science, from 2012 to 2014. For reading, 2013 to 2014. And then grade 11 math is only 2014. As part of the contract with AIR, they are required to there is a retention policy that we have that they must agree to, so they have to hold on to our data for a particular period of time in case something was to be discovered down the road. And then there's also, they have to adhere to particular security requirements and holding that information secure. So I don't know if I...
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Ms. Dugan, would that apply for Explore and Plan information as well?
Ms. Dugan.
Yes. The Explore and Plan contract, again, our contract, all of our contracts require that they maintain FERPA requirements and that they maintain data integrity. Explore, Plan, and ACT are, because they are national products, mm-hmm. adhere to their retention policy, not to Minnesota's retention policy.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Dugan, is there any fear then that there is data out there that's not protected because they are on a different level from our protections under the state?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. The only difference from that retention policy is not a security difference. It's a how long do they hold on to the records. So the security controls around that information, that's not up for negotiation. But how long they retain, for example, we have in our retention policy how long a student's answer document is retained. And so ACT may have a different policy than Minnesota's. And so it's how long do they hold on to that physical test book. That may vary.
Thank you. One last question. This is from Mr. Heller in the audience. He wants me to ask, what is the currently independent reading metrics with reading MCA 3s, which is considered proficient at the 8th grade pass level? If you can answer that. If not, I will give you his little sticky, and you can address him.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So reading MCA 3s, consistent with the standards that Minnesota has adopted, our reading indices, if you will, utilizes the Lexile metric. And so we look at the Lexile level, or the readability, if you will, of individual passages, and also grade level appropriateness before placing them on a test. So an individual passage has a readability indices. When we go to set standards, so for example, we call that process standard setting. I apologize. I think I'm going to get really into the weeds and into some technical jargon, so bear with me just a moment. When we go into standard setting and we set those achievement levels, they are looking at the individual questions, not necessarily a passage or that passage's Lexile level. They are taking into account the complexities of that passage in order to answer a given question. But that standard setting process to identify for 8th grade, an 8th grade meets or an 8th grade partially meets, they're looking at an individual question and where that falls on the difficulty continuum rather than placing passages on that. They're looking at individual questions, but certainly they are taking into account the complexity of those passages.
Thank you, Ms. Dugan, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson and Ms. Dugan. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, I just have a couple of timeline questions with the MCA timeline. So it says from May 26th to June 12th, you finalize data elements, and then on June 24th, official results are available for district electronically through the MDE secure reports. Why does it take 12 days from when you finish finalizing the data elements until the results are available for districts electronically?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Well, two of those days are a weekend. So June 12th is a Friday. Okay. And then the other portion of that is that what they're finalizing, again, are what we refer to as test codes. So if a student was absent and they need to create an individual test record for that student so that that is taken into account in accountability calculations. But those official results before we take the data and place them into that secure report environment, it's a different, I'll call it a system in a very loose way. The interface, I'll call it that. The data interface is different from a district perspective. And so we've got to QC the data to make sure that what they told us those data elements were get applied correctly, and that that rolls forward into the interface to report out those student results. So it's taking that, again, we want to be sure that, that everything is dotted and crossed appropriately.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, so you're kind of just continuing to finalize the data elements then until the 24th? Or maybe I misunderstood your answer.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. We're not finalizing the data. So the data elements are finalized on June 12th. What we're doing from June 12th to June 24th is preparing them for viewing. If you will, to make sure that, again, everything is reporting and displaying correctly in that process.
Representative Christensen.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, thank you. Then my other question is still with the timeline between when the results are available electronically on June 24th, so the results, the reports are available, but then it takes until August 3rd until the paper reports arrive in the districts. Maybe it's more complicated, but don't you just kind of print the results out and send them in the mail?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. One piece of information I want to be sure that that I state again is that the timelines you see here are timelines for this year. And so we're every year we look to shorten the timelines and improve the timelines. So the timelines that are here are specific for this school year. So June 24th is when the results are displayed in the secure reports. On June 28th is when the reports are available in the data center. And so, that's available publicly. And so, That's July 28th, and then July 29th, so from June 12th to July 29th, we're making sure that all of the information is taken correctly and also aggregated. So between June 12th and July 28th, we are aggregating the results. So we're taking student results and aggregating to a school, a district, and to the state, and we want to be sure that we do that correctly. The reports are actually available electronically to the districts on July 29th. So once the PDFs are available, then yes, that is, and part of that is part of those timelines are again QCing to make sure that all of those data elements are represented correctly, and we have control processes in place that we review to make sure that specific scenarios are reporting correctly across the board. So again, it's not just the calculations that's involved, it's also the QC that goes into making sure that before anything it is reported that it is accurate and complete.
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Ms. Dugan, so the results available for districts on June 24th, it says those are official results. What are you continuing to quality control and do after that? Are some of those aggregate numbers not available on June 24th to the district?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Correct. So on June 24th, those are student results. They do not have their aggregate results on June 24th. Those are only student-level results. They can't go into the system and compare their school's results to the state's yet because we haven't aggregated all of that information. So, yes. So June 24th, they have student-level results, but then they would not have there's a date in there that I'm missing, but until July 28th when they're in the data center and publicly available. That would be the aggregate information.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I like where we're going with this, having over a decade ago been exposed to NWEA or EA in order to see how the students are doing, feedback, to the teachers so that if there are weaknesses in the classroom for different topics or capabilities or standards, they can be addressed real time instead of the old, well, after the fact, we're telling you that you didn't learn this. So I like the progress, and I feel as long as each question is tied to one or more standards, it's pretty easy to see what topics, areas, concepts may be missing. I do have some consternation about where the district staff has availability within an hour, because when you're looking at those timelines and the weeks, it's basically after the fact, but if you're going to put it into the classroom, you'd have to do the, is it ALPA, is the abbreviation, and opt into that at some point earlier and be able to integrate and see how you were effective, and that's a good feedback for the curriculum. With the historical longitudinal data, I'm hoping they're saving the questions with an identifier so that then you, if you change standards or modify, you can still have an attribute so you know what you're covering. So the end result would be, I'm a junior and I'm thinking I'm going to be an electrical engineer, a nurse, etc. You can go in and pull up a report because for that career path or goal, you have these courses you'll take in college and preparatory, and there'll be an analysis which says these are the areas you need to work on. You need assistance, because the goal is to, when you come out of high school, you don't have to take remedial. And it looks as if we're working towards that capability. Do you have any comments of when we might be able to reach that, and how close we might be to that?
Ms. Tugan.
Thank you. So a few things, so I'll try to hit all of them. So yes, ULPA, the ULPA administrations, and again, that window opens in fall and goes through mid-February, and those have immediate results or within an hour. Those results are available and are available down to the teacher level, but if the district rosters. So they're available in that on-demand reporting system, as are the MCA results. So the MCA results, if a district chose to roster, then an individual teacher can go and look at the MCA results. They don't have to wait until June 24th. One of the pieces that we've heard a lot about from districts, and this is part of the reason that the science benchmark reports we've heard a lot about, and we just finalized the math ones actually for last year, and so those will be coming out this spring as well. A teacher can look at those benchmark reports and compare their students or their schools. The benchmark reports, because it's such a fine grain level, only goes down to a school level. But then they can have content conversations about coverage and strategy and making adjustments. And so again, they're not having to wait until the summer to just have that one time to do that, to have that conversation about curricular planning, that it can be an ongoing continuous feedback loop to help their planning. And as far as when I think we might be there, I think we're going to, I hope we're going to be able to take a great step forward in the next year, really looking at this parent portal. Until we bring that group in to, again, for parents to really give us feedback, I would love for that to be operational in spring of 16, but I don't know how large they're going to dream. And so I don't know exactly what those timelines or costs are going to look like. So we are genuinely trying to get there, and have heard from the field that we need to improve that facet, and we're working diligently to do so, but we're not moving as quickly as anyone would like.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with the parent portal, I'm curious about the granularity, so that if you're have a junior high student, late elementary, who has an aptitude and a desire. Would the parent portal and the public data have the granularity to different topical scores or composites by site, not just district?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So I think for a given student and thinking about the career planning and that conversation about course selection and all of those pieces, I think that was a lot of the intent behind the legislation in 2013 was so that those students weren't starting those conversations in eighth grade, but so that the parents could possibly be, obviously a third grader is not going to be part of the conversation, or not at the same level as an eighth grader, but to inform the parents as soon as possible about that student's trajectory. And so that was a large intent. As to the level of granularity, I think think so much of it is really going to come down to those focus groups and talking about where what is their vision and what is helpful to them. One of the pieces that we're really I think a piece that hasn't come up so far in this group is that Explore and Plan is being phased out by ACT, and so this is ACT has said that it's an option for us to administer Explore Plan in 15-16, but after that the test will no longer be available. And so we're having conversations about what does that career exploration now look like? What does that system look like? And what information, what is that interplay between assessment results and career interest, and maybe it all loops into that parent portal. But I think it's a very complex situation, but it's also very exciting.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm sorry my verbiage obscured the intent of the question. What I was after was my district that I live in, when I was on the school board, we had closing of different grades. And with open enrollment, we've had some mobility and options for all students, whether they had the money to go private or not. And so I'm looking at is, nowadays you can get reports on schools on the internet, but I'm not sure where they're coming from. But if our parents had the be able to look at by sight that this school was strong in STEM or math or orchestra, et cetera, those type of things, I would think that the public access to be able to open enroll to a school that fit their student the best. And that's where the question was leading, what kind of granularity and data do we envision?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So currently on the data center, we report out for math and reading down to the strand level comparison by school and by grade. So a parent could look at a school and compare how one particular school is doing in grade 5, maybe looking at the algebra emphasis and compare it to another school's algebra performance. So that level of granularity is already available on our data center. As far as the, I think possibly what you're getting at is how do we get the message out to parents that information is available, and I think that's another conversation. But I think at a school level, I don't anticipate publicly presenting more than that strand level for a school by grade. But I think in the parent portal, potentially, and again, we have to figure out. excuse me, have to figure out. Parent access roles, et cetera. But I think it's possible that we could provide an individual student's, not just their strand performance, but also maybe more detailed information. And again, combine it with other data elements to inform that piece. So I hope that helps.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Dugan. Am I correct in looking at slide 17 that the state is spending $29.7 million on testing annually?
Ms. Dugan.
It's always good to check my math.
Estimating, yes. I concur.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, do you know what the budget is for MDE?
Ms. Dugan.
I do not.
Fair enough.
It is also important to note that those are all of those contracts are not paid from state funds. Several of these contracts are paid through federal funds. It's not all, and I apologize for not stating that earlier. These are not all state funds paying for this.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, did I understand you correctly? That only 30 districts in the state report having homeless, highly mobile students. I understood the less than 10 is an issue, but I think 30 floated up there as well, and I'm just trying to understand what your message was, or was it 50?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. I will attempt to clarify and.
And I will attempt to understand.
Okay. thank you. So 30. Approximately 32 districts exceed 50 students that are identified as homeless or highly mobile across their grade. So in a given district, there are only 32 districts that holistically have more than 50 students. So once we started going down to a grade level, then conceptually, then if they were equally distributed across 12 grades, then we would be taking the 50 and dividing down. We'd be creating the report that would only be meaningful for 32 districts out of 500 districts.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's interesting and insightful, so thank you. I guess the question that still arises, I mean, sometimes anomalous data is still of value because it's an anomaly. And the primary, under No Child Left Behind, the primary purpose of this testing regimen is not to tell me as a parent how my child is doing. It's to evaluate schools. My child is merely a cute little data point with legs. Wouldn't knowing if there's even a reportable number, given your cell size threshold, of homeless, highly mobile students be of value in allowing parents to do exactly what Representative Kwan was talking about, of being able to compare schools. I've got a high school program in my district for pregnant and parenting teens that has a 37% homeless and highly mobile rate. That's very different than even my traditional high school, either of the traditional high schools that are in my district. As a parent, that's potentially valuable information. So wouldn't that information, even if you tell me too few to count, too few to report, isn't that useful for me to be able to better compare the performance of school A versus school B?
Ms. Dugan.
Absolutely. And I think part of what I have not been able to have a conversation with is conversations with districts about how they are approaching this. It is quite conceivable that districts are, because that districts have this information, that districts are doing their own meaningful analysis and are using the data in a way that I'm not aware of. Maybe they're placing that on their website. Maybe they're utilizing that to look at a specific student group and how to better reach that particular group. I just started looking at it from the state perspective, and again, you know, just thinking about creating a report that would only have information, potentially only have information for 30 districts out of 500. So it doesn't mean that my update is not intended to say that we're done investigating. It's just this is as much as I've gotten to so far.
Thank you, Ms. Dugan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Debney. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 9, you have the provide on-track education for career and college. I'm wondering if, does that provide different info if, now I can see maybe by grade 10, students are kind of zeroing in on a certain track for whether their career or what type of college. Does this on-track indication differentiate between students who are planning and they've met with their counselors, they're planning on, let's say, not going anywhere after high school but into a certain type of work, and versus going into a tech college versus going into PhD in philosophy versus whatever? And if so, how do you do that going? This doesn't differentiate between any particular grades. How would you do that before even grade 10? And even then, don't students often change their where they're going?
Ms. Dugan.
That's my first question.
Thank you. So our current plan, I'll try not to get too into the technical weeds. So we've taken the definition that's in statute of a student that is career and college ready, which indicates that they're ready for success in enrolling in a post-secondary education institution without the need for remediation. So we're using that state statute definition and mapping backwards. I think that your question of will it look different at different grade levels? I think it will. I think the error band will be greater at grade 3 than it will, say, at grade 7, 8, or 10. And so we'll do the best that we can. We're working with the requirements and the definitions and data that we have available to us.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure.
Representative Mullery.
Maybe I didn't ask my question right. Is the differentiate between if this student is career and college ready, I thought was pretty much a certain thing. Either you need remediation or you're that in a certain way. I was asking if this on-track meant a different thing. Like, let's say I've met with my counselor. I'm going to be some kind of a tech. So I'm going to tech college. I've decided not to go on to anything afterwards. I'm going into something that doesn't require a cert, maybe even a high school degree. Is that distinguished here, or on track just mean towards whether you're, quotes, career and college ready versus needing remediation?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. It does not differentiate, and again, the statute is clear in giving that definition, and so statistically, I don't know how we would differentiate those pieces, and then we get into the. I'm not sure that legally I could differentiate those given what current statute is.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I probably agree under current statute it would easily be possible to do that, and apparently don't. My second question is, I know it seems like every kid has every electronic thing now, but there are a lot of kids in my district that nobody in their family has any of these, and there's school districts that don't have them available for people. So how do you offset or the facility? I mean, if you're facile at using the online equipment or mobile, you're going to do better, especially if there's any kind of a time on the test. You just are going to do better. So how do you offset that?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So a few things. So I'll go back to the transition when we went from paper to online. And we found that there were, for math, there were not mode effects. For reading, we made a slight statistical adjustment when we did our comparability studies in 2013. And so we think we've accounted for that difference statistically, and that's an industry standard to go through that process. Additionally, so they may not have a there will not be required to test on a tablet. The district can make the decision that most students would test on a tablet, but maybe an individual student is most appropriate to be tested on a computer or on a laptop, a more traditional static machine. And then there's always going to be students that cannot be assessed electronically. So, for example, a student that needs a Braille test or a student that when they use a computer, it induces seizures, we do have paper accommodations available for those students. So we've attempted to account for the statistical adjustments as well as allowing accommodations where to the greatest extent possible. I think a large point of part of what you're expressing concern about, we have concern about as well, and especially as we move to a tablet. And so it's going to be really important that we're sure that the students participating in that tablet study are representative of all students in Minnesota and to make sure that we have a large enough sample there. And just to clarify, the MCAs are not timed assessments. So that is one of the advantages of moving online, that the students can pause the test if they if they need to take a break or maybe they're at the end of reading a passage, et cetera. So they're not timed assessments, and they can be the electronic test can be paused where the student is most appropriate for that individual student or where the teacher thinks is most appropriate.
Representative Mallory.
Madam Chair, I guess I'll follow up later because it's a concern of mine for really poor families, and so I'm not quite satisfied yet.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm mindful you have to lower the gavel in 30 seconds, so I'll just ask a very quick question on a number of things. But
we've got until 2:30, Representative Mariani.
Oh, well, then I will. Okay, I thought it was 2 o'clock.
But I do have a few other people on
the list.
Okay. Doesn't mean you get the whole half hour.
Well, I'll try to be quick. Ms. Dugan, I do agree with your angst over poetry on smartphones. You know, scrolling poet, there's no such thing as scrolling poetry. You know, it's just words following words. And this really does, you know, point to some of the challenges that both the downside as well as the upside. But yeah, word scrolling is not poetry. It's too bad Representative Quam's out of the room. I do think that Representative Dabney did identify on a policy. But he's out of the room, too. On a policy front, the tension that exists between a testing regime that is interested in school system accountability, where, quite frankly, I think most human beings and citizens are really interested in their kid and how their child is doing relative to reality. And I suspect that Ms. Dugan, I think you've done some really good work in trying to squeeze out, you know, from that dominant original scenario, something that is much more useful to the individual student. But I seriously doubt that that's ever going to truly be possible. You know, we have a system accountability, framework that Washington, D.C. handed to us. And in this legislature, we're not oblivious to the need to that, but We want to be able to go back to our districts and respond with policy that, that helps junior and daughters be able to get to where they need to get to. And quite frankly, you know, getting information in May or June, I mean, the school year is done in May. So classroom instruction possibilities are greatly minimized under the current regime. And there's still use for it, for sure, but, you know, this really explains why everyone's, you know, doing all this other testing, which is really much more relevant to students. So I just want folks to keep that in mind, that there is this tension here. So when we start talking about too many tests and reducing tests, let's be real clear about what we're talking about. You know, if we're going to reduce federally mandated tests, you know, we probably can't do that unless we're willing to walk away from Title I monies. And so what are we doing away with? You know, the things that really help junior and the, I don't know what the equivalent is for junior, for daughter, but, you know, get to where they need to get to. So sister, yeah, brother and sister. So Ms. Dugan, I would say on the grade 8 expectation, I think you're right about this, the parenting engagement empowerment piece, but quite frankly, as someone who helped craft that, we're quite serious about really, you know, setting high expectations of students even in 8th grade to be able to articulate the beginnings, at the very least, of a cogent plan for themselves, knowing that plans will change, but just getting into that mindset. So we're really looking at impacting the culture of our schools. In terms of costs, as Finance Committee, so let me ask very quickly. On page 17, you've got the Pearson contract that includes the grad element. We, in my opinion, wisely got rid of the high-stakes grad requirements. Are we still incurring costs relative to the grad test?
Ms. Dugan.
We are. Legally, we did not... We must continue to offer the grad assessment to those students in order to offer them sufficient notice that it was being eliminated. Because that was their graduation requirements, right. We're not legally able to stop offering that test. We have cut back substantially on those offerings as the need for that assessment has shifted. So, for example, this year we moved from, instead of every month administrations, this year we moved to every other month administrations, which reduced costs, and then next year we'll be going to once a quarter. So those costs will diminish over time, and we've tried to, meeting the requirements of sufficient notice, be judicious in when we were offering those assessments.
And Madam Chair, and Ms. Dugan, let me just say, Madam Chair, you know, so for the record, you know, we did something here to reduce costs by eliminating that grant test requirement. It might be helpful for us at some future date for Mrs. Strawn to let us know what is the division of burden, if you will, relative to federal versus state expenditures. I suppose as we get into the budget, we'll do that. But once we do that, I just want to make sure that we're aware of how much of that testing allocation is being complemented, if you will, by federal, federal outlays. Ms. Dugan, just two other things very quickly. One is the Plan Explore change that that Pearson is doing. That I just want to be clear. That does not, however, relieve. Or let me just ask it. Does that relieve the expectation? Because I don't remember how we wrote that statute. But does that relieve our expectation that whether it's Explore or the plan, that something happened during that period of time, and that we're going to need a tool and an instrument to make that happen?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So yes, we will, as ACT eliminates Explore and Plan, we will need to we will need to identify an alternative solution. One alternative, ACT has developed another product called ACT Aspire. And we can talk about that a little bit more probably in conjunction with the test reduction advisory work group recommendation. But yes, the in my interpretation of the statute, we would need to, as it currently is, we would need to find a replacement for that after the 15-16 school year.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Ms. Dugan, I didn't speak. That was the ACT, not Pearson. My last question is, so on pages 15 and 16, you've got, you identify some of the work that the department is looking at. Should we anticipate requests from the department for appropriations to support that work, or is that work that the department is going to be able to do within its existing budgetary framework?
Ms. Dugan.
I'm not going to answer that question. I think we'll have to get back to you on that. I think the I feel comfortable answering the redesign. I think we'll probably make a redesign of the student reports probably under the existing funding structure, depending on what that focus group tells us we need to move forward with.
Fair enough.
Depending on that, we may need to explore other options.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have three quick questions. On slide 12, you have your assessment survey results, and I'm just wondering, of the list of assessments you include in the third bullet point, which assessment was used most frequently by the responding districts, and if you have that information, do you have a rough percentage of districts using the most frequently used test?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. I don't have that information with me today. I know that that is planned to be part of the test reduction work group presentation on the 12th.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then, I'd recently met with one of my school districts, and they're concerned about the ELL students. And if you look at, you know, slide number 5, they're the most tested, I believe. And so I'm just wondering, you talked, and I'm very happy as a former special education teacher that special education advisory was included. But I'm wondering which of the advisory committees you list on slide number 10 deal with ELL students.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. I'm sorry. The statewide testing participates in English learner work groups and those committees. They are not specifically advising statewide testing, but we go and talk with them about specific pieces that are exclusive to assessment, rather than having them come back for a separate meeting and advising us on those. We do have English learner representation on that accommodations committee, and that is absolutely talked about. For example, I know a large concern was brought up. ACT does not recognize English learners when they are exclusively English learners when they are applying for accommodations for ACT, and so they don't grant accommodations to English learners, and that was talked about on that accommodations committee. So it's not a specific group per se that is exclusively advising assessments, but we're definitely active with those groups and interacting with those groups for them to advise us in the development.
Great.
Representative Seltzer.
And I just have one last question. So it's exciting that in 2016 the test will be adaptive beyond grade level. Is that correct? And so will that adaptive range be wide enough to accommodate the needs of our ELL students? Because some of these students are older and just beginning English language learners.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Yes, so to clarify, the math test for 3 through 8 has been adaptive since 2012, and the reading test will be adaptive in 2016. And so the first component, again, will be aligned to grade level content and how the student performs on that. Then it will, if needed, unlock additional grade levels outside of that enrolled grade level. I can't tell you definitively right now how far down on the difficulty continuum all of those items will be, and whether we'll meet every single English learner's needs. We just haven't seen all of those simulations play out yet. But that is definitely something that we're really concerned about as we roll that out, really talking about English learners, and then also a focus there is also students that are special education students but not eligible for the MTAS assessment. And so that the lower achieving end of a grade level is definitely part of the conversation, as is the gifted end of this grade level as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dugan. I have a few questions for you myself, and I think I'm going to pick up first a little bit on I think what Representative Mariani was addressing with how much testing and that. I mean, clearly there are federal requirements that have precipitated some of these tests, but we also have state law that requires tests aligned to our state standards, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so either even if the federal standards went away, and I know that there's some debate about that going on in Congress right now, but you know, our current state law still requires tests aligned to our state standards. Is there, and again, I approach a lot of these topics with the mindset of a parent, you know, with all of the other testing that our districts are doing, and part of your focus groups in that are you, or your surveys to the districts on the additional types of tests they're doing that are not required federally or state, discussions with the districts about why the MCA data and other things that they're doing is not meeting the needs of their teachers with regards to the other things that they're finding through the optional tests they're doing? Or is that a topic of discussion that you've surveyed districts on? And if so, what you're finding? Is it a timing issue with regards to the timing of the tests and the information coming back? Is it the actual content of the tests as well, that there's other things that the districts want to measure? I'm just curious as to what, you know, how wide-ranging was your survey, and what can you tell us about that?
Thank you. The survey did not go that in-depth. It really was trying to get just an initial snapshot of the assessments that are offered at different grade levels. And so we did not ask what is the purpose of this assessment, or how are the results used. That was not part of the survey itself. Again, when others come back and we talk about the test reduction advisory work group, that was talked about. And I think a large portion of what we have begun having the conversation about is, especially with that assessment and accountability committee, as well as our local accountability committee, is maybe, I would phrase it maybe a little bit differently. We've been talking about what changes need to be made to the MCA reporting structure, or to the access to the data, or the information provided, or the interpretive materials. What changes need to occur to make the MCA more relevant and more meaningful for instruction and instructional curriculum decisions?
And thank you, Ms. Dugan. And then back to that on the survey, in asking the schools what other type of tests they did you ask them how much they spend on that additional testing, or do you have any data on that?
We did not include costs in that. I would not have that. I would not have that information.
Thank you. Are you aware if the department collects any kind of that information from the districts?
I'm not, but that's something we can look into before the 12th.
Thank you. I would be interested. And also, I'm just again, because the finance component here, I've asked Mr. Strom, and he's going to work with Ms. Johnson on trying to break out those costs from the $29 million, how much is federal and how much is state, and looking at those things. But just on the, you know, within the last couple of years, you know, the Explore and the Plan are now required tests, and then the ACT plus writing. Can you tell me, do you know how much it costs per student for those tests? Do we have a per student breakdown on the Explore and Plan, then, and also on the ACT plus writing?
I don't have those with me today, but we can definitely provide those as follow-up.
Thank you. And again, as a parent of a student who's a senior, and we've gone through all of that stuff just recently, I'm just curious as when the department then would negotiate or work on a contract to do those things. I'm assuming you're going to get some kind of a break on the price versus somebody just paying for an individual student. Do you know if that is an accurate assumption on my part?
I would not make that assumption.
Okay.
Because they are, because it is a different structure. They are providing detailed information at not a student level, but they are reporting out at multiple aggregate levels. And so there's additional work that is being done under that.
Okay.
I can't speak to whether it is or is not, but I would not make that assumption.
All right. Thank you. And if you could find out and get that for the committee, I would appreciate it. And then also on the ACT plus writing, because we have a lot of students, obviously, that we're going to take that regardless, and now we're offering it. What is how can a student or a parent and student, their families, use that test result? It's, you know, if you, let's say your student gets a really great score, can you use that? I know there's a process for transmitting those scores to the colleges of your choice, and, you know, I think there's a certain amount you can send without cost, but additional will cost you more money. What's the interaction of that? Do the parents have the ability to do that, or the families have the ability to do that with these tests that are administered not at their specific choice, but it's now required of all of our students?
Thank you. I apologize that last Thursday I did not state this. When a student takes the ACT plus writing on that April 28th, on that statewide date, those are college reportable scores. And so a student can, again, as you were saying, can absolutely select up to four higher education institutions to report their scores to at no fee to the student. Or they could select zero and see what their score is and then go back into the online portal with ACT and then report out, but then that cost would be incurred by the individual student. And so, you know, we've had a lot of questions about, well, what if I'm satisfied and I don't want to report it? They're not required to report it. They have that opportunity. But if it's not included in that initial administration and they do that in the portal, then there is an additional fee to the student. Obviously not as much as taking the test again, if they're satisfied with that score. And that is again part of the reason that we've had so many conversations, especially with that accountability accommodations committee, talking about ACT's accommodations, because they are only reportable scores if a student needs an accommodation. They're only reportable scores if ACT approves that accommodation. So if ACT does not approve that accommodation, then they still can take the test, but it's not college reportable. And so there's been a lot of conversation, again, specific for specific students with disabilities or English learners that their accommodations requests are not approved by ACT, in which case they are not college reportable. But the vast majority of students, when they take the ACT on the 28th, will be a college reportable score.
Thank you. And then kind of back to a little bit of what Representative Christensen was asking about. Now, it's my understanding, and the state's had kind of a long-standing relationship a little bit off and on, but with Pearson, and they're currently with us. And I was talking with some of their representatives that going back as far as maybe the year 2000, that MDE had worked with them on more information coming to the parents with the reporting of the MCA scores, and including maybe recommendations of websites with, I talked about math games and things that I had my own children do, you know, supporting materials to help build their skills in areas where there appeared to be deficiencies. Are those kinds, is that kind of information still reported on MCA, the scores cards, the report cards that go to the parents or not? Because I don't recall knowing about that. I was wondering if we've got an issue with getting information to the parents and to making that useful. And then again, that feeds back into the timeline, which, I have a great degree of difficulty with. I think, you know, again, the tests are used for a variety of reasons. If the teachers are getting it, you know, if your school is testing in March and the teachers are getting it immediate feedback, I would think that would certainly be a component of discussion with the parents, assuming there's a parent-teacher conference at some point that will occur between the time that test is done and the end of the year. And also, if it's a more formal process of reporting to the parents, but certainly before we hit the August time frame, a lot of parents will look at, may look at that information and indicate, you know, my child needs reinforcement over the summer and some of the skills that they are not proficient in, and also wondering if our schools are using this information for summer learning for their students who need it.
Thank you. So I believe the site you're referencing is Pearson Perspective, and so again, that was the question was asked on Thursday of what that participation or usage of that system is, and again, that's a system that actually you could all go out to. It's a publicly available site. You can go out and search activities by subject and by grade level. And interact with them for free. What Pearson does provide on the student report is a learning locator. So based on a student's performance, a student is given a learning locator, and then they would put that into Pearson Perspective instead of sorting through all of the activities, say, in grade 7 math algebra. When they put in their learning locator, it says you did well in algebra, so I'm going to give you hard grade 7 algebra activities and maybe give you some that are even tested more appropriate for a grade 8 algebra concept, or vice versa. If I didn't do well in algebra, then that learning locator knows that and creates that customized learning plan, if you will, by strand. And so that information is on our student reports, and that information, as well as for reading, we report out a student's Lexile level based on, again, their performance on the reading assessment. So both of those components are there. I will be very honest. Both of those components are in small font. So again, those are pieces where they're small font now. It's a very dense report. We fear it gets lost. And it's not information that we're required to give, but in order to maintain our Title I funding. So that was part of the piece, that was part of the information that we were wondering if that would be better in the parent portal for that very reason, so that there's more interpretation there, and it links them right into Perspective when they get that information. And so that's absolutely something that we are looking for feedback from parents. It's not probably as widely used as some of our other resources. I would say some districts rely on it a lot, and some districts use it a little bit, and some districts don't use it at all. Some districts use it in their after-school programming. You can assign students individual activities, so some teachers use that for their sub plans, for example. So it's it varies by district how they approach that, and I think it varies even more when you get into the parent communication about how widely known it is that information is available on the student report.
Well, again, I think with some of these things, the element of timing, which I assume will be part of your discussions and your focus groups as well, is a big factor here. Again, getting a report in August about how my child did last school year is probably going to be a little less impactful with regards to reinforcement activities than they would have been if I got them, say, right around the time school was out. The summer is largely gone by then. So, all right, we are close to our appointed hour for ending. So with that, I would thank the committee for their good questions. And just a reminder that tomorrow's committee meeting is a joint hearing with HHS Finance to talk about sort of the broad range of early childhood initiatives and programs out there, because they do cross the jurisdictional boundaries between MDE and human services. So that's going to be in room 200. So same time, 12:45, but in room 200. So with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.